It's time for JT the Brick.
Let's go. Let's pick up the pace. There are high expectations for this team. The Raiders have an established offensive line. You might not love it, but Colt Miller, Dylan Parham, Andre James, we got some big dudes today. Who's going to start that first game? Aiden O'Connell, one. Gardner Minshew, two. I want the ball out. I want the ball out quickly. I want slants. Will the ball get out? One Mississippi, two Mississippi, out.
JT the Brick.
And in the last regime, we took too much time in between plays for no apparent reason. We got to get Brock Bowers the ball all the time. He is a gift from the sports gods handed to us in Vegas. If Bowers comes in with 73 receptions and 11 touchdowns or 9 touchdowns, that changes everything. If I'm wrong, you know where to find me.
And now,
get him the ball.
Here's JT the Brick.
All right, JT, back with you. Quick announcement here. VSiN, that's based here. That's the sports gaming network here. Our good friend Brent Musburger bought it back. How about that deal? Woo! How about that deal? Sell it, buy it back. The Godfather, and they just named today award-winning sports programmer Steve Cohen, their EVP of talent and programming. I want to give a shout-out to Steve Cohen, who hired me at Mad Dog Sports Radio, has been a mentor of mine, a friend of mine, and that's a big deal. He's an elite programmer and really sharp guy, diehard Raider fan, and a good guy, one of the people in radio I'm happy to call friend. Because, Bobby, you can't be friends with everybody in radio. I mean, what's a friend? I have real friends, like guys I went to first grade with. Those are my friends. You can't categorize them with the radio guys, not all of them down the hall. But this guy's a friend in real life, and I'm really happy for Steve Cohen. So, and then we carry their programming at night and overnight here into Pauly and Mitch in the morning. So that's a nice move there. So I just played you that soundbite of the Herd, Colin Coward show, just trashing the Raiders, saying they're potentially the worst team in football. Well, they're second in the AFC West last year and before. And they knocked the Chargers out of the playoffs the year before that. And they've won 8 in a row against Denver. So you got to take it personally. Unless you can tell me why the Chargers are going to be better than the Raiders and Denver is going to be better than the Raiders, you really can't use that and have that argument. You can think the Raiders stink and they're only going to win 4 games. I don't have a problem with that. There are more people out there saying the Raiders are a 5 or 6 win team than the Raiders are an 11-12 win team. I know that. But you just can't make it that personal in Raider Nation. You can't. And, you know, there's a lot of waiters out there and servers, and cocktail servers, and, you know, people that drive Ubers and, you know, are in the real world who are Raider fans. You just can't tell them that they suck when they've beaten Denver 8 in a row and Denver got rid of Jerry Jeudy and everybody else. And they got Bo Nix. Okay. Well, are our quarterbacks that bad? I don't think they're bad. Gardner Minshew, everybody around the league would say, he's a pretty good player. They're not comparing him to Patrick Mahomes or even Justin Herbert. He's a good player. Can he beat anybody in this league? Absolutely. Gardner Minshew could beat Lamar Jackson. He could beat Mahomes if he has a good game, doesn't turn it over, and plays really high-level football, and the defense carries the team and plays well. But you're not going to hear that other than anybody else who's pro-Raiders. I'm pro-Raiders. I will never apologize for that. Someday I won't be here. Don't know, matter where it is. Could be whatever that number is. I will walk away with my head up knowing I've always protected the Raider Nation on the radio. That's it. Put that on my brick. I have an actual brick walking that in. Just has my name, JT the Brick. And it should say underneath that, always protecting the Raider Nation on radio. Matter of fact, I want that new brick. Take the other one out. It says JT the Brick. Everyone knows it's a brick. It's right there in front of, right there. I meet everybody at the brick. Protector of the Raider Nation on radio. Nonsense. Raiders are the worst team in football? Worse than Carolina? Worse than Washington? Really? Okay. Clicks. Works out that way. All right, here we go. We are down to the number 2. Greatest Raider game of all time. Let's get to it.
We now present the Raiders' top 10 games of all time.
And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs.
The history of the Raiders.
Fires for Bolitnikoff. He is going to get inside the five. Touchdown!
The games that helped make the Raiders one of the most recognized franchises in NFL history.
Just win, baby.
The Raiders' top 10 games of all time begins now. Number 2.
All right, here we go. Number 2, January 9th, 1977. The Raiders' first Super Bowl win, Super Bowl 11. The 1976 Raiders advanced to Super Bowl 11 with a 13-1 regular season record and a 2-0 mark in the playoffs, upending the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Championship for the first time in 3 tries. Those are 3 Super Bowls the Raiders could have had that the Steelers had. I want to stop there for a second. It's a big point. We're in the mid-70s. Now we're into 76, into the early part of 77. Remember that number. Big deal. Against the, and that was the Sugar Bear Hamilton game against the Patriots in the divisional playoff, where if Sugar Bear Hamilton doesn't hit Stabler late, the Raiders lose that game and this game gets wiped out. It never exists. Wow, what a game that was. So the Vikings, the NFC champions, you know how many fans were at the Rose Bowl for that game? 103,424. The silver and black put forth a dominant effort on both the offense and the defense in posting a 32-14 victory and capturing the club's first ever Super Bowl championship. Oakland built a 16-0 first half lead as Dave Casper and Pete Banaszak, the Rooster, each scored short touchdowns after receptions by Fred Biletnikoff brought the Raiders to the goal line on 2 separate drives. Let me stop. Fred Biletnikoff, the first Hall of Fame MVP of a Super Bowl who did not score a touchdown. He had 2 monster receptions that got it to the goal line for some easy scores. Freddie B did a lot of work on those drives. An additional short yardage touchdown by Banaszak in the second half put the Raiders up 26-7, set the stage for the significant signature moment of the contest with Fran Tarkenton under heavy pressure in the fourth quarter. Veteran Willie Brown intercepted a pass and returned it 75 yards for a touchdown to seal the victory. The Vikings could only muster 2 second-half touchdowns as the Silver and Black put together a dominant defensive performance, limiting Chuck Foreman to just 44 yards rushing and intercepting Fran Tarkenton twice, future Hall of Famer. Biletnikoff, 79 yards on 4 receptions, 3 of which set up Raider touchdowns, earned him MVP honors, with Clarence Davis helped with a pace of 137 rushing yards on only 16 carries. A starting 12 Raiders from Super Bowl 11 would go on to enshrinement into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The most recent Cliff Branch, who never should have had to wait that long. 12 members of this team are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, with owner Al Davis joining head coach John Madden, Biletnikoff, Brown, Ted Hendricks, Ray Guy, Ken Stabler, Gene Upshaw, Art Shell, Casper, assistant coach at the time, Tom Flores, and as I mentioned, the great Clifford Branch. Wow. Super Bowl 11, sun-drenched skies of Pasadena at the Rose Bowl as the Raiders early on a fumble recovery gets them going early.
Back up in the middle. Nothing. Fumble
there and a loose ball. Raiders recovered as Willie Hall, and he's another opportunist. He's been intercepting and recovering fumbles all year long.
What a story on him, Kurt. You were talking about it earlier. He was a truck driver before this season started. He was cut by a couple of teams. Let's see if he can pick it up. McClendon goes into the middle. Let's see if he did have it. That's Villapiano that comes in from the outside, hits him right where he's carrying that ball. Who covered it? Willie Hall, you're right. There he is, 39, jumps in there, and he says, it's my ball.
Phil Villapiano with the hit. Now, if they would have scored on that opening drive, could have changed the whole game. If the Raiders were the better team, they would have won. But the great hit by Phil Fu Villapiano is one of the great hits, clutch hits, in Raider history by a linebacker. Right there. Turned Super Bowl 11 around early in the game. Here's the snake finding the ghost, Dave Casper.
They've had 9 plays on this drive. They started on their own 36-yard line.
He's got him. Wow, look out.
Casper, yes, touchdown. That's their favorite play. They pulled it repeatedly during the year with a tight end going wide open, and the Raiders marched 64 yards for a score with ease.
Good play action in the middle, Kurt. That ball, it looked like a running play in there. Casper has a delay block at the line of scrimmage, hits his man, usually a linebacker, comes out to the outside. Nobody was there. They held him in the middle with a good play fake.
Kurt Gowdy and Don Meredith. Now, I want to stop and save that soundbite for the future that's so relevant today. Fred Biletnikoff told me several times over a cocktail that the Raiders had a signature play. And as my jaw would drop and I'd go, what was it? Casper. It wasn't Biletnikoff. It wasn't Branch. It wasn't Banaszak. It was that play. Goal line, play action, Casper blocking, releasing, nobody there. They did not run that play all the time. You know what Freddie told me? They ran it when they needed to. Let me stop the show and say to Luke Getsy, Michael Mayer, and Brock Bowers, you have got to have a play like that. It's your job, it's your requirement to have a play that I just played on the flagship of the Raiders. Dave Casper, the go-to, set the block, release, ghost, open in the end zone, no one near him, because the play action worked. So how about this as I prepare to do play-by-play Saturday night? Aiden O'Connell under center. Play action to Zeus up the middle. No, he holds it back, releases, throws it to Michael Mayer, wide open, touchdown. Las Vegas Raiders. Have your signature play. That's the example of it there. One of the great friends that I got to meet and become really good friends with, visiting him in Florida throughout his adult life and my life, the great Pete Banaszak, making it 16-0.
On the 1-foot line.
There you go.
Banaszak. Banaszak scores.
Oh, boy.
The veteran Banaszak is over.
Hey.
And the Raiders punch it in again.
This thing could be getting awful close to a runaway. These Vikings have got to come on with something. Offense or defense, take your pick. Kenny says it's going okay. It's all right. Going about right.
Dandy Don, how great is this play-by-play? Rooster Banaszak wasn't done for the day. This was eventually the dagger.
First down, goal to goal for the Raiders. Pete Banaszak. Banaszak's in. Touchdown. The veteran has 2 touchdowns. There goes the ball up in the stands. He'll be fine. He doesn't care. He gets more money and they'll fine him.
All right.
$15,000 if they hold on to their win. So the Raiders score again. Their first touchdown of the second half.
The only thing that's different is that they went over the right instead of the left, but they did pull out George Peter, the right guard, to lead that play. They sent in Lawrence, as you talked about earlier, the reserve tackle. He was in there in that time. They just, nobody was there. Page tried to do it, couldn't get there quick enough. There you go. There's $200.
George Beeler and Henry Lawrence involved in the Dandy Don analysis of that play. But the signature play, you know, Biletnikoff won the MVP, but the play that most people remember going down in Raider history, this is on the Mount Rushmore.
There's another little quick flip. Look out.
There
he goes. Goodbye.
Grabbed off. Willie Brown on
Goodbye,
his way.
Goodbye,
Willie Brown, the veteran.
Turn out
he
the
waited
line.
For that one. 14 years Willie's waited.
There you
and
go.
He scored a Super Bowl touchdown.
Up.
Look at the Raiders come
up
on the field. The whole squad is going over there.
Now they love Willie. He's been there for a long time.
Look at him mobbing.
You're right. He set back. They were waiting for that little deke out to the outside. Trying to look at that guy. Willie Brown.
He's a defensive captain, all-pro many times. He has been better this year than he's been the last 2 or 3 years. And 14 years, watch him grab this one.
Well, it was almost picked off by Hendricks before he got out to Brown. He was trying to hit Semi White on a little quick square out. There's nothing to it. No foot race there. There's Fran made a little move after him.
Willie Brown has scored a 75-yard touchdown. Bud Grant doesn't change much his present.
Yeah, Bud Grant just got rolled in that game. Old man Willie with the touchdown. We'll get the Bill King version of that, too. We probably have it here in the archives, but you're hearing all this sound. These were the NBC television calls. Final call as the Raiders finally break through. By this point, they could have had two or three Super Bowls already. Not exaggerating. Should have had multiple ones. This was the first.
There it is.
We heard a countdown.
Counting down is right. There he
That's
is.
That's a job. That's the toughest job Oakland's had today. Lifting John Madden up. They got him up there. 250 pounds. Off they go. And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs. And they did it most decisively and very impressively with a final score. Oakland 32 and Minnesota 14.
There it is. Super Bowl 11. We ranked that as the second greatest game in Raiders history. If you want to chime in on that one, 702-365-9200 is the number. You should all have an opinion on that game. If you don't, and you have a phone, I'd be shocked. That's a big one. Where do you put that? All time easily could have been number one. Could have been number one. We had Super Bowl 15 at number three, Super Bowl 11 at number two. Figure it out. After the game, Stabler and Madden on carrying Madden off the field.
Really happy for everybody around you. Happy for John.
John, how's it feel?
Great. Great. Waited a long time for it.
John was not the smallest coach in the league. John's kind of a big guy, and carrying him off the field was kind of a task, even for our biggest guys.
There's the gun, sounding the end of the game. John Madden goes on the shoulders of his players.
Such a great sight to see him smile that way.
John Madden's grin.
Well, I was surprised they could get me out. And the guys were carrying me, and they tripped over a photographer. Then it was just like an avalanche. We all fell down, which was kind of fitting. You carry the coach off and you drop him. I mean, that was kind of the way I was and kind of the way the Raiders were in those days.
How great is that? So John Madden getting lifted up off the field. Remember that iconic view again, 103,000 fans at the time, and Madden on winning his first Super Bowl as the head coach of the Silver and Black.
No one can ever take it away from you. 1976, we won this ring, and it's always ours. But bigger than the ring is the memories. You look at it and you remember all those players, and not only the big stars, but you remember them all, how they sacrificed, you remember what they did. You earned it, and you earned it by playing hard, and you earned it by winning. You earned it by being a champion.
Love it. Just love everything about that segment we just did. Let's save that for a best of. And you like the best of around here a little bit? I'll save that one. And we got some good calls backing it up. So again, this is subjective to what you think are the bigger games or not. We tried to give you a lot of honorable mentions. We tried to get you in there with certain games, certain teams that we thought deserved this type of credit. And Super Bowl 11, 12 Hall of Famers total. Incredible. And there should be more coming down the road again. As he always does after these great games and sound bites, here's Raiders 66.
Hey, JT, good afternoon. I got chills and near tears in my eyes just listening to that sound. And I can't wait for the Bill King, Willie Brown call. But, yeah, you know, maybe you should title your list the Raiders' most important games, because all of these games he had, Al Davis's first win, Mrs. Davis with the torch, and all these games, they're very important games in the list. And you know, great games sometimes, like myself, you know, think of back and forth, dramatic, but these were very important games for the Raiders. And Super Bowl 11 was a big deal. It was the game between two teams that couldn't win the big one. The Vikings and the Raiders, they were both highly successful. They were like the two winningest teams in that time. The Vikings, this is Super Bowl 11. The Vikings were in their fourth Super Bowl. Four out of 11. Can you imagine that? The Raiders were either in or one step away from four of the first five and eight of the first 11 Super Bowls. Just let that sink in. They were one step away from being in eight of the first 11. And everybody they lost to, except the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Immaculate Deception, every other team won the Super Bowl, and it wasn't really close. They could have just been so dominant. But this was a game, like I said, between two teams that couldn't win the big one. John Madden was in his eighth year as head coach. the Raiders had a over 77% winning percentage. The only team better was the Vikings with Bud Grant, 78.1% winning percentage. These two teams were the pinnacle. And you know, how ironic that Minnesota and the Raiders were linked in this one, because Minnesota was the eighth original AFL franchise, and they defected to the NFL. The replacement was Oakland, the Raiders. So these were basically the same team, kind of, you know, playing against each other. And there were a lot of firsts in this game. The January 9th is the earliest Super Bowl that's ever been played. And the reason was, you got to go back to the 72 double overtime game between the Dolphins and the Chiefs on Christmas Day, because this season started 1 week earlier than normal because they didn't want to have a playoff game on Christmas. And if they had played it normally, the division round would have been played on Christmas Day. So they started early. They got an early Super Bowl. It was the last one to be played to finish in daylight. But I tell you, this this game just brings up so many memories. And, you know, I'm just kind of beside myself. But, yeah, the Raiders in that game were so dominant that their 266 yards rushing has only been surpassed twice. The Washington team did it two different times. Other than that, they have the most rushing yards still. We're going into Super Bowl, what, 59? And they still have the number three offense there rushing-wise. And that play that you want to save for Casper, I've been telling my friends about that every year. I go, why don't the Raiders just play fake and throw to the tight end like the Stabler used to do to Casper? And if you remember, one of your games in this round was Ghost of the Post. That double overtime finish was the same thing. Play action, fake up the middle, ghosts on a short little 8 to 10-yard touchdown, and the game was over. Fred Biletnikoff is absolutely right. It was their signature play. They used it when they need it, and it's time for AP and those guys to get the same thing in their head. Thank you so much for the time, JP. I love it. Can't wait for number one. I know what it is.
Yep, it is. It's coming. Coming tomorrow as we'll wrap it up from Costa Mesa. On the greatest Raider games of all time. If Raider 66 can put together a phone call, you don't have to go that deep. You should be able to do it too. 702-365-9200. And an important game for a lot of reasons is 66 just told us eight of the first 11 Super Bowls the Raiders were involved with in some playoff capacity, losing Super Bowl II. Remember, Fred Biletnikoff was on the Super Bowl II team. Fred Biletnikoff. He won the MVP of Super Bowl XI and all the other games that Freddie played from Super Bowl II. Just off the top of my head, the Jets winning Super Bowl III. The Raiders were better than the Jets. Jets beat them fair and square. They went on to win the Super Bowl. Not saying the Raiders would have beat the Colts in the Super Bowl, but the Jets did. The one that bothers me the most is Len Dawson's Super Bowl IV. The Raiders beat the Chiefs twice that year, swept the Chiefs, and look at what happened there. The Chiefs win the Super Bowl. Steelers, their dynasty, the 72 Dolphins, give them that credit, greatest team of all time. Look at the games that I'm mentioning along the way. Those are all games that the Raiders could have won the Super Bowl or been in the Super Bowl, and they lost most of them in dramatic fashion. So for Madden to win that game and survive the playoffs and get there, and they beat the Steelers to erase the Steelers to get to the Super Bowl, but remember, it was that Sugar Bear Hamilton game that we put in our honorable mentions, which I could have put in. We don't have Super Bowl XI if we don't beat the Patriots at home in a game where the Patriots had the lead and there was a late hit call on Ken Stabler that gave the Raiders a new set of downs and won. What happens if Sugar Bear Hamilton doesn't get the Stabler and Stabler doesn't get the late hit? What happens? There's no Super Bowl XI. Man, so much going on here. And Pete Banaszek, real quick story. So Pete ended up moving to Jacksonville at one point, and Pete got there, and he was the analyst on the Jaguars radio network. So, you know, I knew Pete, but I didn't know him well from these alumni events. So my mother-in-law and father-in-law live in St. Augustine, and that's where Pete lived. So I reached out to Pete, and for over 4 or 5 years, my sons would come down. We'd go to Murray's, Bill Murray's Caddyshack. We'd have lunch. Pete and I would play golf together. And then afterwards, we'd go and have a couple beers. And that's Pete Banaszek, who scored 2 touchdowns in that game on the ground. I mean, I am lucky. I am blessed to call a lot of these guys friends. And they had a big impact on my life. Really enjoyed that game. 702-365-9200. So we're playing some sound bites of Raider disrespect on what happened on the Colin Cowherd show. I think that was Thursday. Didn't get around to playing it today. And the big topic today is about the quarterbacks. And I'm looking at the feeds today of all of our insiders, Vic Tafer, Paul Gutierrez, Vinny Bonsignor. And as we're seeing practice today, they had a scrimmage. It looks like Minshew took the lead. Looked like he took the lead. But today there were some good catches by Tucker. This is from Vic Tafer an hour ago. Wilkerson with a nice sideline catch in traffic. Trey Tucker snags the pass running to the sideline and gets feet in. Wide receiver coach Edgar Bennett and sideline really fired up after both. Vic Tafer, both passes from Aiden O'Connell. Minshew had a better second half of practice and scrambled for at least three first downs. Practice ends with a quarterback sneak touchdown. So that's what we're seeing here, and we're going to see what happens along the way. And receiver Jeff Foreman went down with a leg injury, carted off the field. Vic Tafer, an hour ago, it's a knee injury, and it's being evaluated. So he went down with a leg injury here. We hope he's okay. Vic Tafer, an hour ago, Jack Jones showing off the feet again. The benefit of having him do kickoffs is he gets a running start on making the tackle. So every day I'm leaning on these guys, including Q Myers, who's coming up next to see what their eyes see at practice. Let's wake up the phones, man. It's the second greatest Raider game of all time. I'm a flagship radio host in the middle of the day all over the country, evening drive in New York and on the East Coast. Where does Super Bowl II rank in your list of the greatest games of all time? I had it at two. Could be critical of that or not. Love to hear what you have to say. Want to thank Alex and Orlando de Castroverde for putting us in Costa Mesa, the legacy of their proud father who built the law firm, and these two gentlemen and their incredible staff and attorneys who work hard for you. If you get into an accident or injured, the brothers win. The brothers have your back.
It was just typical Madden. The biggest kid of them all was John, enjoying every single bit of it. And he had a whole bunch of reasons to win that Super Bowl game, and he got it done. He became that great coach that got him in the Hall of Fame that day. Great guy to know and great guy to have as a friend.
How great is that? Foo, Phil Villapiano. How great is that? I just love it. Just love it. He saw it, he knew it, and he gets to talk about it still. JT, back with you as we continue on. Aerosmith decided that they're going to shut it down. The first concert I ever saw in my life was Aerosmith. When I was 16 years old, my friend's mom, Mrs. Grell, dropped us off. This is an amazing story, Bobby. You get some Aerosmith going. So I'm 15 or 16. I graduated high school in 83, yes, do the math. And my friend's mom, there were three of us, drove us there and dropped us off. Okay, we were knuckleheads at that age, and my dad picked us up. So my father, when he picked us up at the end of the concert, walked in. Like, you can walk in as your parents in the final 10 minutes. And what were the odds of my dad? Had no idea where my tickets were. Never saw a ticket. My dad walked in to the section we were sitting in, and my buddies elbowed with me and said, "Your dad's there." My dad came early to pick us up. First concert I ever saw in Aerosmith. I think it had to be 81 or 82. How many Aerosmith shows did you see? I mean, you're a diehard Aerosmith fan. I can't imagine. How many?
15, 20. Yeah. I have no idea.
I saw the residency here, and I thought they nailed it when they played here. I really enjoyed the show they did here, which was fantastic. Now, as I always said, there are certain rock stars that cannot be replaced. Saw Rush 54 times. When Neil Peart died, they weren't going to replace him on drums. The band was over.
Of course.
Okay, if Charlie Watts passed away for the Stones, and they went on and played, they got a new drummer. Charlie Watts is great. If Mick Jagger, God forbid, or Keith Richards passed away, it'd be the end of the Stones.
Mm-hmm. You would think.
You would have to be. Now, for Steven Tyler, see, when Steve Perry couldn't sing anymore, a lot of people say, why isn't Steve Perry singing for Journey? He can't. he can't hit those notes anymore and get close to it. So they brought in Filipino Arnell, who they found on YouTube, who I think is fabulous. If you ever go to a Journey concert and see him, the singer's not good. He's fantastic, but he's not Steve Perry. But the band goes on. Do you know that Neil Sean is in a lawsuit with Jonathan Cain?
Has been for years.
They don't even talk. They don't even talk in real life. But there's no way Aerosmith can go out without Steven Tyler, Bobby. That's it, right? They're done?
You know, honestly, I can respect their decision.
Yeah.
I really can because, I mean, for the past few years, it's just been, I mean, you know, this 65 pushing 70, it's been kind of a money grab. I get all that. I also respect the decision because there's a lot of bands out there at Motley Crue who are using a lot of backing tapes and a lot of just guys lip syncing along with the tapes and whatnot. And Aerosmith could have easily done that. And they just said, no, we're going to walk away.
Yeah.
And I can respect that.
Well, I would hope that Tyler would rest his voice and try to get to a point where you can do that. I just saw AC/DC play out at the desert in Coachella when they came back. I think they hadn't played in 7 or 8 or 9 years, whatever the number is. And they sounded okay. They were able to pull it off. Brian Johnson has a really tough voice, scratchy AC/DC voice. He pulled it off. Now, could he go on a tour and do 70 shows? I doubt it.
They're playing in Europe right now. I've heard some of the tapes. They're not bad.
Yeah, they're not bad. But to see Steven Tyler step away, that's hard. And man, they're basically calling it, but they're not calling it. I guess they can still write and put out music in studio.
They won't.
So you think it's full retirement?
They haven't put out an album of new material in 12 years. They're not going to do anything.
This one hit me hard because if I had friends in town and they wanted to go see the residency, because I went and saw the residency of the Scorpions, which was fantastic. I just thought that, you know, Steven, take another year off and come back, man. But if you can't sing, you can't have a rock band. And you mentioned Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Vince Neil is so bad, you can't go see Motley Crue because he was great in his heyday and his voice pulled it off. I wouldn't say he's one of the great vocalists of all time, but he can pull it off. You cannot do Motley Crue without Vince Neil. You can't.
Right. They tried. It didn't work.
It didn't work. So I'm not going to say goodbye to Aerosmith. I have a feeling. I got a feeling that the money is going to be too big, and they're going to want to just come on one more goodbye.
Don't they do
this all the time? Say goodbye. One more. Elton John, 50 goodbyes. Billy Joel's going to do
it. The Eagles for the 400th.
Yeah. So that's it.
I'd like to see it. Never say never, but I don't know. I got a funny feeling on this one.
Yeah, it'd be tough to say goodbye. All right, here's Antonio Pierce from earlier today. Asked about quarterback separation. What's going on with the two quarterbacks?
Hold on.
All right, we'll get to this coming up here. Antonio Pierce from earlier today.
No, I don't think we've, just sit there and say somebody's won yet. I think they both had good moments. I'll go back. I think Gardner's had, several days now where he's made some plays, but there's also some turnovers that show up that we don't want to have happen as well. And again, when I look at Aiden, I see a guy that's throwing the ball accurate. I see some drops by our wide receivers. And I don't think it's just on the quarterbacks. I think overall our offensive play has to pick up sense of urgency, wide receivers, O-line, just all those guys. Again, go back to the very beginning of my opening statement of training camp. They're going against a very good defense. And I think they're feeling that, and I think it's good for our team, the competition part. But obviously, somebody, again, has to just step up. And we're getting closer and closer, and obviously we're getting to game week mode a little bit as we get later in the week.
So I'm sensing today, I wasn't there for this, I'm back here in Vegas, that Antonio Pierce kind of made it clear that it's go time for the quarterbacks. More from the head coach on Aiden O'Connell. Is he going to get the first snap of the preseason or the regular season?
Yeah, I said first snap of the offseason.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that was my statement.
Okay, I got you. So have you decided then?
No, we haven't. Like we still got two more true training camp practices. Then we got Wednesday, Thursday, and then that's when we'll start looking at what we want to do game-wise. But like I said, both quarterbacks want to play a legit quarter. Who goes out first and who goes out second really doesn't matter. Hopefully an equal amount of snaps and opportunities to showcase.
Yeah, that's an important soundbite, saying both quarterbacks will get a quarter. That's important. I'm calling the game. I'm blessed to do that. I want to call a quarter of both. I want to see every preseason game, 1, 2, and 3, Minnesota, the Cowboys, the Niners. I want to see these guys playing a quarter and maybe a half. One of them play a half, not both of them play a half. You got to get the backups in. But I'd really like to see that. Man, look at Paris. Paris, I'm looking at the Eiffel Tower. And, oh, my God, it looks gorgeous, man. Unbelievable. I digress. I don't. That's progress, man. That's incredible. So, Aiden O'Connell Over the last couple of days, it's not a shoo-in, everybody, that he's going to start. For those who thought that he would be the starter, I knew he'd be get the first start in training camp, but that seems to have sailed, where it's now open to debate. More from the head coach today on the scrimmage Saturday night and what he saw.
Yeah, I love the physicality that we played with. I love the guys wasn't shying away from it. There wasn't a lot of missed tackles. I thought our secondary did a really good job of coming up, filling in the alley, our corners keeping force, good job in the run game. And then obviously with the ball in the air, some of them DBs made plays, and that's what we're looking for, you know, turning the ball over, creating those opportunities for offense.
The turnovers are going to be really important and the physicality, not to have a joint practice. I don't know if that's going to hurt them or not. Injuries come with joint practice. They're not going to do this time around. More from Antonio Pierce from this morning on the drills that they're structuring as they have backups right next to the starters as a teaching goal.
Yeah, I just want to good on good and have everybody together just for learning too. You know, we got a lot of coaches, 29 coaches on the staff, so you're also stuff that we're talking about in meeting rooms. They could be next to a younger player talking to them about what's going on the field. So the true mental rep that we talk about in National Football League is really happening because you got a coach next to you, coaching you up throughout the play.
I like that. Bring everyone together, coach, let all the coaches talk to the kids. We're trying to make the team, watch the starters, and learn as you're standing there. Now, the wide receivers, as I always say, I'm not a fan of talking about practice squad receivers or the sixth receiver, but this year it could be different. Devontae's out as he waits for the birth of his son. You've got to have some other guys step up along the way. Antonio Pierce asked about DJ Turner and Christian Wilkerson.
Do I see those two guys as bubble players? I think DJ has put himself in a good position. He's one of the best special teams players on our team, and I think in the National Football League. Very productive as a gunner, very active. You know, he had a really good end of the season. Remember that Chargers game, caused a fumble. And then he's really stepped up his game offensively. I think Christian's in the same boat. You know, he's kind of finding his role where he's at. You know, like he could play both spots, both Devontae's and Jacoby as a backup. But the key thing will come down to special teams. You know, how much Tom McMahon and we can trust them, how much can our team rely on to be a four-core guy.
And, Bobby, play 70 here because I heard this in real time about Jack Jones. So Jack Jones is a pretty emotional player. He's a very emotional player. If he drops a ball, if he makes a mistake, you can see it because he's out there and no doubt about it, you see him kind of punch the turf or just yell. And he was asked today, the head coach, about managing the emotions of Jack Jones.
Well, before he gets to the game, he has to do it in practice. So I can promise you, if he's dropping balls, he won't be out there in the game.
Ooh. Ooh. If he's dropping balls, he won't be out there in the game. It doesn't mean that a cornerback. Special teams and what's going to happen there. So for, look, every once in a while, Antonio Pierce, I'm sure, I don't know anything about their relationship that dates back to high school instead of what you know. You know, he goes back to, I coached him in high school. ASU, everything he was able to do, and then he brought him in when no doubt he had no future left in New England. So there is loyalty there. There's a lot of loyalty there. That was an interesting downbite. That caught me a little bit off guard. So as we sit here today and we wonder out loud, who's going to make the team? Too early. Who's on the bubble? Too early. Who's going to be the starting quarterback? Too early. For me it is. Maybe not for you. So we'll hear what you have to say about this. Is pretty important, very important on your opinion on the quarterback, and I value your opinion. We all know that Aiden's better outside the pocket when it breaks down, which it could break down more without Colt Miller and Jackson Power Johnson out there and getting the reps in. So he might be running more, and if it has to be a running quarterback, Gardner Minshew's a better mobile quarterback than Aiden O'Connell. Now, Devontae plays a big role in this, too, because I really think Devontae was building chemistry, good chemistry along the way with Aiden O'Connell. Devontae's important to this organization. He's the big high-profile player. And as a super high-profile player, you want to keep Devontae happy. We're grown-ass men and women. We can talk about that. Devontae needs to be kept happy. He needs the ball. Did you watch Netflix Receivers? He needs the football. The only way he's going to get him, they got to get him the football in the short passing game, if the offensive line is not stable enough to block for long periods of time. No fullback, Zamir White, play action. It's not complicated yet. This is not complicated yet, but it could end up being complicated. All right, one more and then I'll come back. I got to do Mad Dog tonight, which I'm excited about, 4 to 7 p.m. Thrilled about that. Hey, Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Want to give a shout out to Charles Woodson and his famed acclaimed Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. He's been a proud partner since the birth of Raider Nation Radio. Wherever you go, I need you to ask for Woodson Bourbon Whiskey. Everywhere. And then if they don't have it, come back to us and we'll get our team on it to make sure that every establishment in Vegas has Woodson Bourbon Whiskey.
One-one. Swung on, line drive, back up the middle, it is a base hit. Volpe scores from third, LeMahieu wins the ball game. It is a walk-off single for DJ LeMahieu in the bottom of the 10th. And the Yankees walk off here on a Sunday in the Bronx. They beat the Blue Jays in 10, 4-3 the final.
Wow, that was good. Yankees win. I'm happier when the Yankees win. JT, back with you. Tito's Handmade Vodka, we welcome them today. Proud new partner of the show. That is a big deal. Big deal for us here. That's one of the premium brands in America when it comes to spirits. We're happy to bring them into the show, and it's a great story behind how long we've been building this relationship. They're on board. Raider Nation Radio, Tito's Handmade Vodka. Check out all the social media we'll be doing with them, and we're happy to welcome them in as a partnership of this team. So a controversial guy in the NFL is Harrison Butker, the kicker from the Chiefs. The Chiefs have agreed to terms on a contract extension to make him the highest paid kicker in the NFL. All right, he's a great kicker. It's a 4-year, $25.6 million deal. He gets $17.8 million in guarantees. He's the new highest paid kicker at $6.4 million a year. Controversial, yeah. I mean, when he said a couple of things here that rattled some ladies. I don't talk politics on the show. I don't dive too deep into that, but there's a lot of people that don't like him, and there's a lot of people that do like him. That's a big number here overall. Very big number overall. A Bengals coach, Zach Taylor, told reporters that defensive end Cam Sample tore his Achilles and is out for the season. He called the loss huge for a consistent player and a consistent person. That's a big deal. Geno Smith is back for the Seahawks as of today. And the Hall of Fame that went down over the weekend. I just want to say a few things about that. We didn't go this year to the Pro Football Hall of Fame because there was really no Raiders getting in. So I usually go on that trip when either the Raiders are playing or the Raiders have a player getting in. And that wasn't the case this time. But, man, what a good class. So Dwight Freeney got in. Here's the class. Dwight Freeney, Randy Gradishaw, the legendary Bronco, Devin Hester, Andre Johnson, what a great career he had, Steve McMichael, Mongo McMichael, Julius Peppers, and Patrick Willis. Not bad. I mean, I'm looking at that class, and I'm not saying he's not a Hall of Famer. All those guys, to me, are Hall of Famers. I didn't know that Dwight Freeney is currently arguably Michael Jordan's best friend. So Michael Jordan was at his party. That's nuts. You know, Michael Jordan doesn't come to Canton, Ohio, period. Not that I've ever heard of. And there's pictures of him and fans as he hung out with his cigar and his wife at Dwight. I guess they play golf 5 days a week. So they really hang out a lot together. And then Mongo McMichael from the Bears, the 85 Bears team. Interesting story. He got into Gridiron Greats a number of years ago. And I'm the MC of that event in Chicago. And I'm on stage, and I throw to a video about their career. And then when the video's over, I say, the Gridiron Greats welcome Steve McMichael into their Hall of Fame. And everybody stands up, and he comes on stage, and I present him with the trophy. And he shook my hand and almost broke it. I mean, for real. He shook my hand and shook it. And he was so excited to go on stage. And this is right in the beginning. Wasn't in a wheelchair. You know, he's suffering from ALS, and he was in his room with his great teammates around him. And I think I was at one of the great events with him right when he was diagnosed and this started. And you couldn't tell, and he gave a beautiful speech that night. We took pictures. I was really happy for him there. It was very uncomfortable for years to wonder if he would make it, but he made it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Devin Hester, the Super Bowl return helped him get in. Is he the last of the returners to ever get in? Probably. Yeah, that's it. Because there's no more returns. So as I'm prepping for this game against Minnesota, one of the things I'm excited about is to talk about the new kickoff. But I saw with the Raiders in practice, and the fans saw it too. A.J. Cole could kick off and kick off a drop kick. So that would be a ball that hits the ground as you kick it. Has to hit the ground first. Daniel Carlson could hit a knuckleball. If you can hit that ball over the wave of the players that are lined up into the drop zone, as they call it, and then all of a sudden it's a knuckleball and the ball just bounces in a bad direction, that's interesting to see what could happen there. And for the Raiders, Dylan Lobby, Nate Hobbs, Jack Jones, they got to find a returner that could hold on to the football and not fumble it. Because as I talked to Tom Telesco about it, he's excited. The Raiders have to be good at special teams this year because everybody around the league doesn't think they're great at quarterback. We know they're very good on defense. If they can be great at special teams or above average, that could be the difference. If you nail it and you can take that ball on the run and find a hole, because you got the other side of the defenders who are covering the kick coming from the other side of the field. If you hit the hole quickly, you can get a 30, 40-yard return. I don't know how good the Raiders are going to be at that because I don't know who's going to make the team yet. They have to have players who are players that are just going to play special teams and have really big impacts there. Q's coming up next. He always has a big show, and he's been out there, and he stayed straight through. And that's really tough to do. So good job by Q, who's doing multiple shows from Costa Mesa and got us all up there. Thanks, Bobby. As we hit the number two Raider game of all time, Super Bowl 11, we got one more game as we wrap up our summer series tomorrow. I got an early flight to Costa Mesa. I'm live from Costa Mesa tomorrow. I'm excited to be there for that the next 2 days. Sirius XM tonight, 4 to 7 Pacific. Excited to do that. Normally it's at Wynn, but they're going under construction. I'll do that from home and then the rest of the camp before we head to Minnesota. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.